Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 6, titled Off Brand. What'd you think of this episode, Aaron?
I really liked it. It was, why did I like it so much? Okay.
It's a good question, because I did too.
It's a slower-paced episode, but I guess for the first time in a long time, they kind of threw a surprise at me that delighted me.
The fact that
Saul Goodman, it wasn't any kind of complex legal chicanery. It wasn't a force out of HHM.
Right.
It wasn't
his brother's death
It was just him pulling some out of his ass to do this career as a two-bit movie commercial director.
The mother of necessity, right?
Yeah.
Necessity's mother of invention, and he invented this name.
And I don't know about you, but I have a soft spot for kind of like local advertising. Like it's one of the pleasures of watching live TV is to see, oh God, here comes Bueller's Ford, and what are they going to come up with this time? So like
Keller and Keller.
Yeah, I feel like that this feels right for a transition period for Jimmy, and it also kind of upsets a lot of apple carts as far as like how does Kim feel about it. It also develops the Nacho plot line, which has kind of been floundering for almost an entire season now. So even though it's hard to put a finger on exactly why I liked it so much, I guess it just felt like a breath of fresh air and in entirely unexpected directions, and I enjoyed it for that. And also there's enough of old familiar nods to kind of make the Breaking Bad fan in me happy. What about you?
I like it for all those reasons. I also think it got a lot more plate spinning, which is interesting to me, with the creators of this show being as good as I know they are at, you know, kind of paying off that stuff. Mm-hmm. When they get a lot of gears in motion, you see a machine work really, really well. And that's kind of what I'm hoping we get toward the end of this season is, the stuff that they're setting up now causing real problems and real drama for the characters at the end of the season.
Right.
So I'm excited to see the beginning of that. And I think, some people I think have a problem at this point with so many of the Breaking Bad characters coming in. But honestly, for some reason, I don't mind it. I minded it at the beginning. And I think, I don't know if I was talking with you on the podcast about this or with my girlfriend at home. It has to do with like the artificiality of putting the characters in there, right?
Right.
Because now, like at the beginning of the series, it felt like, oh, we're just seeing Tuco for the sake of seeing Tuco.
Yeah.
Whereas now it feels like, okay, all the pieces are coming together. We know that these things had to have happened at some point in the past, and we're just naturally seeing them.
Yeah,
and so it works really well.
It's like
me
finding out Darth Vader built C-3PO and that Chewbacca and Yoda were best buds. Like, really? An entire fucking, like of all the doors you knock on, it's Tuco's grandma's door.
Right.
Whereas this is like, yeah, of course. Once Mike and Saul / Jimmy meet up, which you knew they were going to, all these other connections come built in.
Mm-hmm.
It still feels like shoving Tuco in that first season was a big misstep, and because those are also my two least favorite episodes of Better Call Saul.
Yep.
But I guess you got to shoot a pilot, and you got to get people hooked, and you got to do all that, and I don't think they really knew what the show was going to be about. But if this is rounding into, because a lot of people forget that, you know, even Breaking Bad wasn't Breaking Bad as a lot of people imagine it until late season 3 and especially season 4 when it really kicks into high gear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this is going to pivot like that away from the small time more towards something that's big, you know, and you've got plots on several fronts that bear watching, I think it's super cool. And it seems like it's kind of maybe energized the crew too, because I was on the Insider podcast. They were talking about how they've never really had to shuffle B plots.
Yeah.
And how that's kind of like a new challenge for him. Because, you know, Breaking Bad, everything was an A plot. Even Jesse stuff was really an A plot. And Skyler and Hank and all that, they were all treated with the gravitas of, like, you know, main characters. There weren't any like Geordi and Deanna Troi episodes or Beverly Crusher episodes. They were all Kirk and Picard and Riker to Vince and company. So this is an, you know, like, the Stacey and Mike stuff, that's a C-plot, but it's a really good C-plot.
Mm-hmm.
And Nacho and his struggles to maintain his father's separation from the Enterprise and his, you know, little things he has to do, like kick his buddy's ass, those are B-plots, but they're really, really good B-plots. So I mean, if last episode was the one of the best Better Call Sauls of all time, I think this, I hope, kind of, I would like to see this episode be kind of like the standard benchmark for all regular episodes of Better Call Saul.
Yeah, you like them mixing it up, having multiple plots.
I'm just saying, like, all of these, like, everything just felt like it was sinking, and there was no time where, like, something little, like, drag, and I never felt like there was any filler. Like, some of the montages have felt a little indulgent in the early going of this season, and felt like they were deliberately stretching things out, and it worked because Mike is kind of, you know, a really fascinating character, and Jimmy, you know, Bob Odenkirk is funny, but when you can cut to, like, Mike and Stacy just hanging out and developing character, or Nacho sewing his thumb up in a sewing machine, like, that's, I think, fundamentally more interesting than spending 10 minutes watching Mike trudge through the desert roads of Albuquerque.
Sure, yeah, I agree with that. I'm all about the character drama. The other thing I think they do really good, really well here is they have set Saul up in a place where, or Jimmy up in a place where his own tendencies are going to be his worst, be his downfall essentially, or could potentially be.
Right.
Because we've seen the way he makes commercials, right? Mm-hmm. This is a guy who breaks laws to make commercials.
Sure.
So now he's in the ad game, like, full-fledged. Mm-hmm. He's going to be in some serious trouble if he continues making commercials the same way he's made them in the past.
Yeah, I wonder. Because he can actually... The thing here's the crucial difference.
I mean, trespassed on a military base.
But here's
the thing.
He
trespassed on school grounds.
That was a really good commercial. That thing looked like $1 million. It had, like, you know what I'm saying?
Compared to the shit that he produced this episode.
And compared to his Better Call Saul, I wonder if, like, he has kind of backed into this quick and dirty gonzo style of television commercial directing, and that
for
he's
sure.
not going to be doing things like sneak on a military base and illegally using an elementary school as a backdrop and...
I mean, we don't see him get permission to use the TV studio here.
No, but also we didn't see him hop barbed wire fences or, you know, shit. I've seen those installations here and there and everywhere, and it doesn't seem like you have to...
I'm just saying he has a tendency to do that, and they've shown it to us in the show before, so...
And I'm hearing
it's
you,
a danger.
And that's certainly... But I'm also showing the other side of where it might not go that way. Because, here's the thing. He clearly doesn't lose his legal license.
Right.
They have a year of... heel cooling, which I suspect they're going to do. You know, they're going to get this season to a point where they can kind of put things in mothball for a while, and maybe we're going to be treated to a big time jump. But, like, I just don't know how much. Are they really going to do, like, a full season of Jimmy the television commercial producer? I mean, I'd be down for that.
And how does he make the pivot from ad man Jimmy to lawyer Jimmy, or ad man Better Call Saul? The lawyer Better Call Saul.
You know?
I mean, that's a big pivot when, because we see in this episode, like, everybody knows him as Gimme Jimmy, right?
Right.
And he's kind of fond of that. No, so now he's going to become known as Saul Goodman, the ad man.
Right. And then pivot.
How does he change directions there?
I mean, that'll be interesting. That will be interesting to see. But I just, I don't know if this is something that we talked about or something I heard on another podcast or what, but, like, that Jimmy's a guy who likes the beginnings of things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he likes the idea of things, and he's always thinking about the next scam, the next thing, and when he finally gets there, like, you know, he's perpetually the guy who's pulling one last heist, and then he does that, and he starts getting itchy fingers again. It seems like this career fits him like a glove.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't end up staying with it, so why? Is it because, you know, dealing with this kind of small-town, small-minded entrepreneur bull? Like, I've done web design for these people back when I was starting my tech career.
Yeah, it's rough.
And it's miserable because they don't want to spend any goddamn money. They want it to look amazing, and their tastes are terrible.
Uh-huh.
So I can see just like him getting elder law thinking like, oh, look at this. I backed into this amazing thing and I can take this down and go Davis and Maine. And then he gets in it and it's a lot of, you know, kissing old people's ass and being buttoned down and hard work. And, you know, he can't color outside the lines. I just wonder if there's going to be that kind of, he's going to bump up against the FCC maybe, or he's going to bump up against just the fact that his clients are all a bunch of weird you know, carpet and tile salespeople, and he's going to get tired of it and then go back to law. But like,
yeah, and he's using a loophole in the contract, essentially, yeah, giving away airtime for free. I'm sure that's probably technically legal.
Well, but that's the thing. Like,
but it's borderline.
I don't know. It's like one of those. It sounds like something a C lawyer would come up with like, you know, it's like, you know, like if you just take a plain reading of the law and add a little bit of common sense, no, fuckers, you don't know. It's surprising that I guess if Jimmy's saying it, he knows enough about the law, he's probably in the clear. But if anyone else had said that, I'd be like, yeah, you should probably check all the relevant case law and how many people have been sued and mm-hmm. how much money it's going to cost to defend you. And because it does seem like if you had that contract, that they would specifically not want you to do that particular thing.
Yeah, and we know this doesn't happen, but you could see if his business as the ad man becomes successful enough, what does he even care?
Right.
You know? Although, no, the PDP or the PPD would actually send him to prison if he broke it. So,
yeah,
he's got to watch out.
Yeah, he does. And that's the thing. It's just like, you know, if you ever hear guys like, oh, I'm not taking money, I'm bartering and I'm taking chickens. and it's like, well, the IRS will come and want to know the fair cash value for your fucking chickens. Uh-huh. Pay that in taxes. You can't pay, you know, like it all comes down to dollars and cents eventually. And you can't get away from these things forever. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a lot of things going on this week, like every week at baldmove.com. In addition to the big three, Fargo, The Leftovers, Better Call Saul. We also, either this week or next week, have a Twin Peaks retrospective podcast looking over the classic series and kind of preparation for the new one. It's a Community Commission podcast. We've got Alien Covenant, a pretty highly coveted.
good, good
anticipated.
Effort.
Thanks.
I applaud the effort.
Thanks.
Just,
I'll take it. I'll take the the participation medal from you. But a highly anticipated summer blockbuster movie I'm excited for.
Yeah, me too.
I'm always down for a new Alien movie. That's coming out Thursday night. The regular review for everyone, the spoiler-filled one for the club members. And also we've got... speaking of the big three, each week Jim and I are doing this little segment. It's silly, it's dumb, it's kind of fun. Who won the week? We take Fargo, The Leftovers, and Better Call Saul. We compare them and we decide who won that week. And last week was a split decision.
Yeah.
It kind of ebbs and flows. So if you're a fan of those three shows, you want to participate in that. Also, Cecily and I will be having, I can't remember if it's going to be the end of this week or early next week, we'll have updates about The Handmaid's Tale and American Gods, which I'm a lot more enamored with after three episodes. I'm finally figuring out where I'm supposed to be doing in this series. So we got that to look forward to at baldmove.com.
Should we get into the recap?
I suppose we should.
All right, we start off with Nacho collecting from his dealers. Crazy 8's light this week, which is not good for him. Nacho was going to let it go, but Hector gives him some shit from the bleachers there, and he takes Crazy 8 in the kitchen and he beats him. And then later Nacho's working at his father's upholstery company and he runs the sewing machine right through his hand as he's thinking about the situation he's in.
Yeah, man, this is the most brutal off-screen ass kicking since Happy Gilmore's boss tuned up Shooter McGavin for stealing the gold jacket. Like, it just went on forever. There was a lot of, like, really sickening, wet smacking noises and desperate screams from poor Domingo here. It's a bad scene, man.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You see where Tuco gets it from. Like, he is the anti-Gus. He is, someone on Reddit said he's in an unfortunate position because he's risen to the level where you need to be a bit more of a businessman than a gangster. Mm-hmm. But being the gangster is what got him to the position he's at, and he doesn't know how to do it any other way.
Yeah, and being the son of this dude, or not the son, the nephew of Hector, you know, he's certainly been influenced. Like, I can see an unruly kid who goes under the wing of Hector and turns into Tuco.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hell, it might be genetic.
Yeah.
But you know, this guy has zero chill about it, because you know, that's the thing. It would be better. Like, I understand.
It's breakage, man.
I know. Right.
Jesus
right.
Christ. Like, let a smart it slide criminal, one
like,
week.
And I know that there's, like, you're dealing with criminals, so they're going to try to scam you all the time, and you can't appear weak. But it seems like there'd be some kind of metric where, like, okay, we let it slide this week. If this ever happens again, then it's your ass.
Yeah. If you say you're coming back next week with double the payment, yeah. You come back next week with double the payment, you get right. Your ass beat.
And what I think is really interesting is we later in Breaking Bad find out the Crazy Eights turned criminal informant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You got to wonder if it's not shit like this, you know, he got into this business and his buddy recommended him and he's still like the nice boy from Tampico Furniture and he turns into some fucking thug, like hard looking thug, but he's also, you know, turning criminal informant on the Salamanca Empire. So what good ultimately did beating his ass for a few hundred bucks do for you there, Hector? Also, Hector, while I'm getting out business, you know, career advice, you're still rubber banding your bank.
right.
Your boss told you to stop doing that. Like, I'm super
Maybe
surprised.
Maybe they'll repack it before they hand it over.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Hector's crippling doesn't come apart. Like I, there's so many people that would want him dead at this point. Like, Eladio probably doesn't like him.
Yeah.
Who was the other Don that he's kind of like his equal?
Bolsa?
Yeah, Juan Bolsa. Don Juan Bolsa, Don I think, Juan. Is his actual name. You know, Mike would want him dead.
Yeah.
Gus Nacho wants him dead. Wants him dead. Crazy 8 probably wants him. Well, of course, Crazy 8 wouldn't know why.
Yeah.
Why he got the ass whipping.
A lot of people, though. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's shit like this. You know, he's just sloppy. He thinks he's just laying down the law to keep people in line, right. But what he's really doing is undermining the trust that they have in him.
And that's what always brings down this fucking paranoia. Like, if you've watched anything, Godfather, Casino, Scarface, The Wire, it's always this paranoid bullshit that brings down the criminal organizations.
Yeah.
The cops essentially just kind of apply pressure until the whole thing explodes and no one has any chill or cool because they're all fucking idiot criminals and... except for Gus, and then you just need a really smart, nerdy science teacher to bring him down. I don't know. Although I do see a little bit of Hector's point because, you know, Crazy 8 pulls up in this baller classic Chevy ride, probably worth $1 million. Like,
Where's my money going?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, you could have sold your car and taken out of that in, and then, you know, when you get fat again, buy another baller car. But instead, we're going to take it out of your ass. So,
yeah.
Maybe you should have pulled up in his dad's shitty, what is it, Cavalier? He said, I'm going to bring my dad's Corolla. Maybe you should have borrowed dad's Corolla and showed up with a busted ass seat and then been like, you know, I did everything I can, man.
Yeah. You might even have got Nacho to upholster it for you. Who knows? The other thing I couldn't help but notice here is Hector kind of does nothing anymore, which I envy that position. You know, it's like he set up his operation. It's running however well you think it's running. And he can kind of step back and just do the high level stuff, right?
Just fuck like things up.
Yeah. I mean, he's not good at it, but he's definitely like in the managerial like oversight role here.
It's too bad because Nacho should be running this department.
He should,
And Hector should be enforcement.
Or cash and checks, like whatever. Like,
yeah.
Get him out of here. He's a bad seed, man.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that green top is going to be the salvation.
Maybe. So this first guy who's in there, did you recognize him?
It wouldn't surprise me to find out he was in the crew that ended up shooting Combo.
I think that's who it is.
I'm almost positive. Did he say it on the Insider Podcast? Because I listened to the whole thing with fairly undivided attention, and I don't remember them saying that.
Yeah, I don't remember them saying it either, which is strange because, I mean, it looks like that guy to me, as I remember him. Now, I didn't go back and watch episode that I know he was in when they kill Combo.
Right.
And when Jesse's like trying to track down the people who did kill Combo.
But there's so many. He could have been one of the dudes hanging out in Tuco's upstairs cinder block fortress that got blown up by Walt. Who the hell knows?
I mean, he's got a pretty specific look, and I think I remember seeing him in that car, which is surprising because I think at that point he's working for Gus, right? So,
well, I think, yeah, the Gus eventually takes over.
Yeah,
everything.
It seems like at some point he just completely usurps Hector's end of the meth arrangement they've got going here in Albuquerque. So it makes me wonder how that happens and why that happens. Like, is it because of Hector's health problems? Because we know that there's a possibility that Hector knows it was Gus, if this is the case, who did something to him, mm-hmm. To put him in a wheelchair or whatever,
right.
Make him unable to speak. Maybe he can't just tell somebody that, though.
Right.
But it's clear that the people he's working with, like Don Eladio, don't think that, right?
Right.
So somehow he takes over Hector's into the business without just blowing up that entire relationship.
I mean, I kind of feel like that I see all the pieces. Like, it's part of his mic problems, part of his health problems, part of the fact that he is running the company poorly. But, like, you know, if you got to you've got to bet a horse between Hector and Gus, you're going to pick Gus. Yeah. And then you throw Hector in a wheelchair and forget about it. Also,
Bolsa maybe pushes him out.
Tuco being in prison essentially up until Breaking Bad starts, like, that's the other hothead you have to worry about. The cousins maybe, but it seems like they're more a Mexico kind of thing.
Yeah.
They only go north of the border when there's some sort of they're like the Luca Brasi of this organization.
There's an old man to intimidate.
You only unleash them when there's some killing to be done, and then you put them back in their cage.
Right.
So I feel like all the pieces are there. We don't know how they exactly connect, but, you know, Gus is just out-competing him.
Mm-hmm.
Out-competing the shit out of him.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like, you know, Hector is fighting back in a fairly ineffective manner.
Yes. And
you know,
he's distracted.
He's taking an extra brick. He's sticking it to Gus.
Yeah.
Like,
and thinking, oh, I bet he wetted his pants. Gus wasn't even fucking there because he's on to the next one, old man.
Right. And he doesn't care about your stupid shit. He's giving you what you want for now.
Yeah.
And then...
And his front's not a fucking fish taco stand. It's not an ice cream parlor. It's not
upholsterer.
It's not an upholstery thing ran out of some shitty garage in the meatpacking district of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
It's a fucking giant laundromat.
And a franchise operation.
Yes.
Like, Jesus.
Yes. Next level. Next level thinking.
Yeah.
Next level.
Don Eladio's got to appreciate that as well, I assume.
Yeah. Although he seems like he's kind of a fucking idiot, too.
Well, show him the money,
Yeah, but he's kind of like this kind of, like, you know, rich dandy vibe. Like, you know, how long has it been since he's gotten his hands dirty or done anything but swim in his pool and gotten his dick sucked and done rails of cocaine?
Long time.
Long time.
Long time.
Long time.
But Hector's not bringing in the money anymore, so problem.
Yeah. And when he does, it's all fucking rubber banded.
Right.
That's not hygienic.
It's got taco grease all over it. Beef just... beef in the rolls. All right. Kim delivers the closing arguments in Jimmy's defense, noting how much care he has given to his brother over the years. As Rebecca goes to Chuck's house to try and speak with him, he doesn't answer the door. And then later, Kim and Jimmy are celebrating when Rebecca shows up at their office to ask Jimmy to help her contact Chuck. But Jimmy says, fuck Chuck. Hashtag fuck Chuck.
I'm also starting a new hashtag, fuck Rebecca.
Yeah.
Can you, like, here's the problem with fucking narcissists like Chuck is, if you, God forbid, if you're the brother, sister, son or daughter, employee, like, these people, you know, they look like they're just like saints on the outside, and they're like, you know, like, oh, they need you, and they're so, like, you don't even fucking know.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. You don't know anything about this situation.
Right, right.
Nothing. You've been gone for 5-10 years, whatever
right,
it is.
Right.
Jesus Christ, lady.
Yeah, like, just this, and the fact that she... I still think it's crazy that they suspected that she was going to hate Jimmy for this. And it sounds like she does, but, like, mm-hmm. give me a fucking break. You were there.
Yeah.
You were there in the court. And yes, Chuck is crazy. He needs help, but it can't be me. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Do you understand? Like, I'm trying to get my bar license unsuspended, and if I go anywhere within 100 yards of this guy, it's dangerous for me.
This can get sucked back in.
Like, that's... I can understand her showing up and asking. What I cannot abide is how fucking entitled she and therefore Chuck is about the request. It's not a request. It's like, well, I just asked you to be nice. I didn't think you'd be an asshole and say no. Like, get the fuck out of here, lady.
Yeah, when she says you owe him, I'm like, fuck you. And I was like literally cheering that Jimmy stuck to his guns.
I
might have
been shouting at the screen when I watched it because that's just is
time,
like,
to do what's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
And how good Howard, for you, Jimmy. How Howard sucks this shit up and turns it into 35-year-old scotch, I'll never know. Because the
Howard
man
knows Chuck.
He's probably a piece of work too. I bet his old man is just like Chuck, and he's just like fucking been created in a laboratory to put up with Chuck's bullshit.
So the argument here, I guess, in Kim's defense of him, is that Jimmy snapped, but the destruction of evidence did not happen. There was no premeditated motivation. He essentially went over to the house out of anger, and destroyed this tape.
He broke the law, but he didn't,
like, not knowing what was on it.
He didn't do anything like an officer of the like any special crime that an officer of the court could commit. Like, he didn't destroy Evan. He
didn't violate
lost
the
his
ethics
temper.
Of the
he
law.
Lost his temper.
Yeah. So I guess that works for me. I'm surprised they didn't go with the. I mean, they kind of did, but they gloss over it. The idea that this isn't even evidence, right?
Right.
Because Chuck was playing, was play acting, as he says. Jimmy was play acting, as he says.
Yeah.
So I guess that nullifies the evidence. Hmm. Then we go over to Stacy dragging Mike to group therapy to be with her as she talks about Maddie. And afterward, she asks him to volunteer his time to pour concrete for the church's playground, and he agrees. I gotta say, it's a little insulting what I think Stacy is doing here.
Oh, okay. Because I thought I might have to sell you on this. Apparently, you're
first of all, but it's doubly insulting because she says you and Maddie built a carport when he was little, and I'm like, that's 112 years ago, lady. This man has been. His knees are
that's
the
when
size
his earlobes
of melons.
Didn't touch his shoulders.
Yeah, this man can't bend down, let alone pour concrete.
Right. Right.
You are an asshole for asking him to do this.
Yeah, you just sentence him to hard labor. But he does love it.
He does. He's connecting
he's like
with his family.
My dad's got the same mental illness. He's like he's 70s. It's in his 70s, and he just had a fucking quadruple heart bypass or however, whatever the max. Maybe it was 5. And he just can't. He's already doing just improbable amounts of work up in his farm in Kokomo. It's like what he.
Why?
Go watch television all day. All day.
That's not good for your heart.
I mean, it's being sedentary. It's like he'll probably outlive me. But I'm just like, yeah, he just I don't see how or why they keep pushing their bodies that way. But
yeah.
Anyway, I thought you were going in a different direction.
I kind of am. Okay. Is this more manipulation from Mike's daughter or daughter-in-law?
That's a big question, because back when we heard the shots fired thing, like, was she, you know, she's clearly got some kind of traumatic stress about the death of her husband, and rightfully so, and she's going through the support group, and she's also trying to get Mike to go stealth and get involved in this community, because she thinks he could probably use with a little bit of talk therapy, and to be honest, he could.
But,
he really would
but
benefit
come on,
from it.
It's Mike.
It's Mike. He's not going to do that. So
no.
The question is, did Mike, and it's tragic either in any answer, because Sepinwall laid out two of these. Like, did Mike forget that did all this bullshit with the corrupt cops and his son's death and these gangsters? Has he forgotten this sweet, innocent moment with his boy? Did Maddie make a story up to make his old man look larger in life in Stacy's eyes? Mm-hmm. Did Stacy make this up to manipulate Mike for whatever reason? Maybe because she just wants the playground to be nicer. Like, is she deliberately manipulating him, or is she trying to is she manipulating him for his own good, for her good? Like, I don't know. It's complicated. And Mike clearly enjoys spending time with her and his family and taking care of his son's family. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's the least I can do now. And he enjoys doing that. And he really responds when Stacy butters him up. But I am wondering, like, what exactly her game is here.
Right. So it depends on what you think of Stacy as a person. Like, how conniving is Stacy? So
I don't really... Okay, go ahead.
Last episode, you remember the scene where they're watching a movie whatever, and the
ice
cream.
And she's worried about him.
She's worried about him, right. So,
and I thought that was genuine.
Yeah, so if you read into that this scene with that perspective, you can kind of see a woman who's trying to get him out of his shell, right?
Exactly.
And participate in this group therapy, get a community around him, get
him
involved with
him
the people.
In something bigger than himself.
Right, and I can totally see that as an altruistic thing for her to do. Now, The other option is she sees that something's bothering him and says, maybe I can take advantage of this.
True.
Maybe the church can get a new playground
yeah.
out of this.
Or
it could be the show just giving Mike excuses, building up to another excuse for him to make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Because he's got to do some work for Gus eventually.
Yeah. I mean, my take right now is that Stacy is all right. That she was suffering from like maybe nightmares, delusions. She thought she was being shot at. She saw like the old damage and she thinks this neighborhood and because her husband got shot up and she's obsessed with crime. Like, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
And largely because of the previous episode where she did seem genuinely concerned about his health and well-being and the fact that he's spending all this money on her. Like, you know, it's one thing to lose your mind in a fit of panic and say you got to get out. It's another to accept your father-in-law's, like, unending, you know, generosity.
Uh-huh.
Like, that. Like, even maybe if she did.
And to squeeze it out of him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I just don't think she's that type of person. I could be wrong.
I think I'm with you on that. I need to see a little more evidence. But so far, I'm going to give Stacy the benefit.
And
of the doubt.
Both things can be true because, like, I think Chuck in some way loves his brother, but there's clearly more important things in his than that brotherly love. So
for sure.
It could be that she does care about Mike and doesn't want, you know, all things being equal, to see him suffer or be miserable. But also that she can, you know, she knows that she's got him kind of wrapped around her finger and she can squeeze him for whatever from time to time.
Yeah. He's going to have to start bringing the ice cream. So speaking of Chuck, Howard stops by Chuck's house with a 35-year bottle of Macallan to congratulate their minor victory. And he's somehow able to snap Chuck out of his funk by appealing to his sense of pride. After Howard leaves, Chuck gets batteries out of his desk and begins pushing the limits of his illness. So this bottle actually dates the series, right?
Yeah.
To 2001. People had a bunch of questions about that. It's 2001.
Right.
Confirmed.
Yeah. Which, I mean, this date stuff is like the least interesting thing to discuss about. But you're right. It's yet another.
Yeah.
The other thing is, keep in mind, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and all them, they care about as much about this date shit as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're pretty good at making sure there's nothing conflicting, but they will fuck up from time to time in the script. So
sure,
but you know, everything that they've said publicly says that this is taking 5 to 6 years before the events of Breaking Bad. So that said, it is funny how crazy he's buttering him up, referring, you know, comparing him to Clarence Darrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is
the Scopes Monkey trial that you're going to, you know, you're going to do all these fantastic things and like think of all the injustices that might go unanswered.
Did
if you
the best years of your life.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
I mean, he's entirely right. If this guy's the genius we've been told, then he needs to get back to practice in fucking law. And if this is and it, you know, like, I don't know. I hate Chuck so much that when he's sitting there huddled under his blanket, acclimating himself to these, oh, watch out, they're high-energy Rayovacs.
Uh-huh.
Watch out, next time he's going to work himself up to Duracell and then fucking lithium who knows? But since it was proven in like a quasi-court of law that this was all psychosomatic, like, I'm disappointed that his first step was, I guess he does pick up and call, I guess, as a therapist that used to see him or a doctor.
Yeah, I think he knows. He knows. He understands that his illness is in his head now.
Right.
And he's trying to... I guess he's doing a little bit of self-therapy here at the beginning, but then he seeks actual professional help.
And he doesn't have a phone in his house, so
that's he's got,
why...
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he has to walk his ass halfway down the main drag of New Mexico to get to the payphone.
He could go out to Tajali, I know that.
Especially in 2001, right? Like, there's a lot that... It's very hard to find a payphone nowadays, but 15 years ago, they're not nearly as uncommon.
That's true.
So I'm kind of surprised that there wasn't, you know, one within a few blocks of his house.
Yeah.
Why you have to go through like the little Vegas portion of of Albuquerque to get there? I don't know.
Yeah, this bottle of scotch is actually a surprisingly expensive bottle of scotch.
That's the first thing I looked up, and I found what pricings were you seeing?
The only one that I saw, I stopped at one. I was like, okay, that's good enough. $5,700.
Okay. I saw for a
very similar bottle, not like 67 Macallan.
Oh, see, I looked for just a 35-year-old bottle of Macallan or because that's 15 years ago. So now it's a 50-year-old bottle of Scotch, so it's probably even more expensive. But first of all, you just can't buy these at a store. No. Like most of the places I've seen prices were like completed auctions and things like that. And I saw anywhere from like 4,000 to one was like 20,000 euro.
Yeah.
And I don't know what made that in particular super special. Maybe it's like case was still intact and the seal. I don't know. But it's a lot. I imagine it did taste amazing, though.
Because they
did sell me that, like, you know, Chuck did the whole thing where, like, you know, he sniffed it in and breathed that and got his whole palate engaged. He seems like a guy who can appreciate nice things, and he was appreciating it. So,
One of the things that I appreciate the Breaking Bad Insider, Better Call Saul Insider podcast for, is they talk about, you know, the production challenges involved in getting this bottle, because, like you said, you can't just go buy this bottle.
Right.
So apparently, what you can do instead of buying a full bottle is you can buy an empty bottle. Mm-hmm. You can fill it with tea, and then you can have your production department build a box.
Painstakingly. And
work with Macallan to actually get
print the label and build this box to spec.
Right, which is what they did, and I thought that was pretty... I guess you can't just use a Zafiro Añejo here, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
Because they've done this before, right? And they just entirely made up a booze.
Right.
So I'm not sure why they didn't do that here instead of going to all the trouble, but that's what they did.
I don't know. Because I guess is it easier to come up with a crazy name for tequila, like people would assume is high end, but like, you know, Scotch, it would be something that we're more familiar with. And like, if you have some kind of crazy faux Scotch sounding name, people would be like, what the fuck?
Uh-huh.
What the fuck is McGee? 35-year-old McGee. What the hell?
35-year-old McGill.
What? McGill, yeah. McPoyle. 35-year-old McPoyle is just curdled milk.
Then we go back over to Jimmy. With Francesca's help, Jimmy informs each and every one of his clients that he's going to be taking a one-year sabbatical from the law. Then he calls the TV station to pull his Gimme Jimmy commercials. And later that night, he tells Kim that he has 9 ads that he's going to have to eat the cost on. It's about $4,000. And Kim begins talking about the overhead on the office, as if they should shut it down, break the lease. And Jimmy says, nope, look, I will cover my end of the costs. The day we decide to shut this down is the day that I come to you and say I don't have the money is the day we decide.
Who do you think is right here?
I don't think either one is right or wrong. Uh-huh. I mean, to Kim, that seems a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Right.
Although every month that they go closer toward the end of the lease becomes less costly, I guess, to break the lease.
Right. Well, more costly, right?
Or more costly to break the lease as compared to just seeing out the lease.
Right.
But I don't think either one is right or wrong. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking like... as a small business owner, there's this concept of a runway, and there's two ways to look at it. Number one, if you got plenty of runway, maybe it's too soon to start panicking because like downsizing, closing shop like that has a negative psychological effect. It feels like a step back. It feels like your own like most of your entrepreneurial stuff is driven by your own personal energy, and to the extent that gets sapped or like the wind is taken out of your sails, that can have a very real impact on your business, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
On the other hand, if your runway is so short that you know you don't feel like you've got enough to take off, then that is a psychological stressor and negative thing all to its own, because you're just now obsessed over every little nickel and dime. And if you make some of these smart cuts to save pounds and not cents, then you're going to be in a better position to weather it. So like, I think that it's tough to say, cause I don't know what their financial situation is. Like from Jimmy's car, not good.
Right. I think Jimmy's financial situation is dubious at best. Mm-hmm. For Kim, nothing has changed. I mean, she had the runway she had before Jimmy's problems came up, you know?
And I imagine that she's like, I mean, she just has the one client, and that's the thing that's, I guess, is scary, because they've had some kind of ominous things about, like, maybe this is going to come back around and hurt her, and then she loses that one client, and they're fucked. Mm-hmm. But if they don't lose that one client, it seems like, you know, what is she, billing out $250 an hour?
Yeah,
she's working full-time plus probably 70-hour weeks for these people. That's a lot of money for a shitty former dentist office in the outskirts of Albuquerque, I would think.
Yeah, she doesn't need to get out of this lease, but I think it would be smart if Jimmy can't hold up his.
I did the back of the envelope math on that, and she's clearing something like just under $1 million.
Yeah, if now, it's all billable.
And also, you know, how long does this Mesa Verde thing last? Like, they're doing this big expansion. When that's done, are they going to retain her as outside counsel, or is she going to have some kind of plan to kind of ease that off? So I don't know. Yeah. It seems like that she's bringing in enough bank to, like, you know, it shouldn't be that big a concern to sell the whole thing. And I don't know. It's tough to say. Plus, the other thing that you can't underestimate is how much in Jimmy's head is their relationship bound into this single building.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That relationship kind of hangs by a thread at times, and they're not even working at the same spot, and, like, you know, how much easier is it going to be for her just to be like, you know what, this just isn't working.
Yeah, and it's very easy for him to also view this as Chuck, a victory for Chuck, right? Yeah. If they have to shut down the shop and Wexler McGill, in whatever form it takes right now, is completely gone, I think he views that as Chuck winning. And he will do whatever he can for Chuck not to win, not even just over him, but also over Kim, right? Like, he doesn't want Kim to have to take a step back because of Chuck.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
The whole reason he's in this thing is to help her out. So, that's another good angle to take, too.
So what do you think about this idea that accidentally running this commercial would have been a violation of his bar agreement?
I mean, there's a lot of bar shit wrapped up in, like I'm always amazed talking to my lawyer friends how some, you know, like there's stuff you can't do as far as advertising. And I imagine if you currently are not legally allowed to practice law and you run a commercial soliciting your law services, that could be, you get in a lot of trouble. I'm always amazed,
like
you're not supposed to guarantee an outcome, but what you can do is show a fictitious defendant shitting their pants at the very mention and say, we better settle this one. How the fuck is that not promising an outcome? Your name is mentioned,
letter of the law, I guess.
Pants are shat, settlement offer is made. Mm-hmm. Like, how the fuck is that legal? You're all lawyers, how can that loophole still exist? I don't know, speaking of Keller and Keller.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would imagine that he would be in, and especially because he's kind of on, like, probably thin ice as part of this you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, like,
part of his probation period.
I think it's an easy argument to say, look, before all this happened, I had these booked. I simply forgot about it. Mm-hmm. I didn't set out to violate your stupid agreement.
I mean, yeah,
like,
but
that's a pretty easy argument to make.
But you'd have to make the argument in front of a board that has the power to strip you of your legal license. So, like, it's probably better to just...
Oh, it's definitely better.
Especially if you're talking about eating $5,000. Like, that's a lot for Jimmy to eat, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than getting your bar license reinstated.
The things he would eat in prison, potentially. Yeah. I also like that he realizes kind of how much people enjoy seeing him on TV.
Uh-huh.
And how much he surprisingly values the relationships that he's built with these elderly clientele, right? I mean, yes, they can be a bit to deal with at times, but overall, I think he likes the position he was in, and he's going to miss that.
Yeah, I don't think he had any – I mean, I'm not speaking as a lawyer, but he probably didn't have to call these people individually. He probably could have sent them a form letter and just, you know, taken off into the sunset. I don't think he owed them that, although I could be wrong. So the fact that he did take the time to call, even though it was, you know, a lot of work and a lot of stress for him, I think does, to your point, that he does kind of take his fiduciary responsibility to these people fairly seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't care how he gets them as clients. Like, I don't think he does anything but his best to represent them.
Yeah.
And, like, I bet I bet their wills are airtight and fully legal instruments, and even Kim Wexler wouldn't have much to say about them.
Yeah, I imagine. All right, Jimmy tries to sell the airtime that he's got to a local carpet business. They actually like the idea, but they don't go for it once Jimmy tells them that they have to decide right now, and we're going to make the commercial in 2.5 hours.
No, it's a hell of a deal for what?
$900 for a slot later that afternoon. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's a hell of a deal.
This company could afford that. It's a carpet company.
But I also
I'm sure.
The whole, like, are you, when he's like, hey, we can have you on the air by 3:20 this afternoon. He's like, are you suggesting we shoot a commercial in 3 hours? And Jimmy's like, oh, no. There's all kinds of post-production and color balance and all that stuff.
It won't take that long.
But we would need to be shooting in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just like,
oh, it's great.
And he, like, as soon as he says that, you can tell that he's lost.
Yeah. And then that look at the end of the scene.
Yeah.
Is brilliant.
It's great. It's great.
And then, you know, he goes back out to the car. And the makeup girl, whose name I don't know, comes up with the idea to shoot an ad for his ads. And Jimmy gets,
Which is kind of brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, the makeup girl turns him into Saul Goodman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kinda. And I love how later on when they're actually shooting this commercial, he looks at this camera guy. He's like, no, I'm not even going to try it with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, oof, no.
Right. Yeah. Because he's just not even going to try the line.
Yeah.
And I like how terrible the makeup girl was. And she's like, I thought you were president of drama club. She's just like, oh, treasurer.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's not here, is it?
What?
That's a later scene?
No, it totally is. It totally is.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So they go, I guess, to the TV station and shoot the actual thing.
The satellite depot. I'm not sure what you'd call that.
Yeah. I mean,
it's probably a cable company, actually. It's
well, they'd had KBV or whatever, WKBV, uh-huh. Whatever the station he mentioned that uh-huh. he's got the airtime on.
Yeah.
Their logo on the wall.
Uh-huh.
So it's probably like a broadcast station.
They're
gonna
shoot
I don't
it
think it's their office.
Walk the tape over to like you know to the
probably,
ad department.
Yeah.
Like here you go, run it. It's 50. You know, you got 15 minutes.
Yeah,
that's surprising too. I don't think that you can literally hand a local TV station some blank VHS tape and have them play whatever.
Yeah, they
like,
have
I,
to vet
I bet
it.
That there have to be vid. It has to go through legal. And
I mean, what if it was just him screaming fuck over and over
right,
into the camera?
Naked, right, naked. Right. With a visible erection.
And masturbating. Yeah, yeah, I mean, they would get sued out the ass for
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. They'd
probably
it'd
sue him,
it'd
too.
It'd be citizens, or be FCC violations, or be all kinds of shitstorm. So, but that's boring. And it's much yeah. more fun to think of Jimmy just like, you know, just barely getting it in and turning his homework at the last minute.
Yep.
So I'll allow it.
We go over to Los Pollos, unloading a truck into the chicken ranch. I think this is the actual chicken ranch. Obviously, it's not the set. Because that's where they do this kind of stuff later on. Hmm. I'm not sure how much of his operation is in full swing here, but
he's
presumably
got several,
he's got
like,
chicken
I thought,
ranches.
What I thought this was supposed to be was the distribution center that Chow manages. Because it's got all those, like...
with the chemicals and stuff?
Yeah, it's
but
got...
he wouldn't have that until he does the laundry business, right?
Well, but he's, you know, he still needs a place to warehouse his, like, chicken shit. Like, because all
yeah,
this stuff was herbs and spices, essentially. Pallets full of that stuff. I was looking for the methylamine, the black barrels with the butterflies on.
Yeah, I don't think he's got that yet.
No, I don't
Not
either.
Until the super lab.
But I think that's what this location was supposed to suggest.
Yeah. Okay. I assumed it was Chicken Ranch, but who knows. Nacho, under orders from Hector, takes an extra brick, and things get tense when with Gus's goons, and they decide to call Gus for confirmation. Gus tells him, let him have the brick. So we do see that the methods are not quite up to where Gus gets them later. They store all this stuff underneath the floorboards of the truck mm-hmm. instead of like in the batter buckets. I don't know, you know, the difference between, I mean, I assume they're doing meth here, right?
I think transporting that that's meth. Cocaine. I've always thought that's cocaine.
I did too,
meth
but
is not a white.
But
like,
we know that the meth he got from the doctor or uh-huh. the drugs he got from the doctor was meth.
Do we?
Yeah, they said that on the instant on the insider cast.
Well, that's what they said, but I'm like, I don't know. That's where like I don't necessarily know that he is correct.
Wait, the guy who made the fucking show
I'm just
is
saying
incorrect.
That, like,
says the podcaster Aaron. What
I'm
man?
I don't know. I've never seen crystal meth in powder form. I haven't seen crystal meth in crystal form. Honestly,
okay.
I don't yeah. know. But it's like I feel like if like. Can you ground sugar so fine that it looks like a powder? Like It always like I've never seen like it be anything else than what I'd call describe as granulated. I don't know.
But I mean the methods they're using to store it regardless is what I was getting
at. So what I thought was that Gus has got this meth thing going and his trucks are at full capacity because all of his fry things are full, mm-hmm. but he can, you know, this is them making room that they've made these compartments filling them full of. I saw some various suggestions. It could be iron oxide to make sure that the things didn't look hollow in an x-ray. Could be coffee grounds, although I didn't think it looked like any fucking coffee grounds I've ever seen.
I wouldn't drink that coffee.
There's this like specially inert silicate clay that someone suggested. It sounds like maybe he knows a little too much about smuggling drugs on Reddit.
Uh-huh.
But regardless, it's something. I mean, it's something to understand. Probably does all those things. It keeps it showing up as a void on the X-rays. It keeps the dogs from smelling it, and it's highly secure.
Yeah, and you know, it's a smart move by Gus at the end of this scene not to put up a fight here. Just temporarily let Hector have what he wants because this is not the time to move on.
As you're laying the groundwork to just further out compete him.
Right.
Yeah.
And Nacho definitely, you know, he's not as unhappy as he will get by the end of this episode, but he is increasingly more and more unhappy.
I thought Victor looked like a real badass in this scene with his quick draw of the gun.
He did,
right to Nacho's head or buddy.
And they made Tyrus look kind of like a fool.
Did they?
A little bit. He reaches for that bag, and Nacho's already gone with
it. I think that's just because Tyrus is just doesn't... He's not as cool as Victor.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
Or as we call him, Tuvok.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that was a really... And I watched that scene a couple of times to see... I think they cheated a bit, because it looks like Jeremiah was pulling the gun before anybody even grabbed for the bag. But but when you see it in full speed, it just looks like some Jason Bourne type shit.
It does. It was cool.
Yeah.
What does this say about Nacho and Gus's potential relationship?
Good things. Good things. Because Nacho is like, he's clearly terrified, but he's got ice water running through his veins. He's smart. He's tough. He's the ideal lieutenant for someone like Gus.
I was kind of getting
at... I'm wondering if that's not the role he doesn't end up playing, and then somehow he gets killed, and that's when, you know, later on Mike is going to take the reins.
Yeah, he could be collateral damage from the Hector stuff.
True.
It's possible.
Although, we're pretty sure Nacho's still alive at the time, because... if he's dead in a desert... Would Saul know about it? Because Saul's scared. He's like, is this about Ignacio? Tell him that I'm going to... Like, he thinks he's still alive.
Right.
But he's also an idiot. So I don't... Like, he could be, like I said, you know, feeding worms out in the desert and Saul be none the wiser.
Well, there was some speculation about, you know, is Nacho doing this bob and weave in front of Hector when Mike's trying to snipe him because he's working with Gus? Like, what's the deal there? I don't think so. It appeared to me in this scene that Nacho was... not working with Gus.
It wouldn't surprise. Well, here's the thing.
Because why would Gus be
Nacho,
so angry?
And didn't Nacho want Mike to kill Hector?
Nacho wanted Mike to kill Hector.
That was the original
deal. So, yeah.
And then Mike's the one that decided not to until they killed a civilian, and it pissed him off so much he decided to go. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the theory that Nacho told Gus that Mike was coming after Hector, and Gus intervened somehow.
Yeah,
but clearly I don't think he's bobbing and weaving and putting. That's a ridiculous part of the theory. But right. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't think they're working together, especially after this scene. It just doesn't seem like it to me.
Man, Gus, while he's checking out the laundromat, he is so blue shifted. I thought he's taking this phone call from 5 years in the past.
Yeah,
it bounced off a sunspot and reflected off the vapor of mercury, and he's taken it 6 years ago, because that's usually Breaking Bad's language, right?
Yeah, yeah, or you do something Saul to indicate it's a flashback.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, they filtered this all the hell and back.
Yeah, maybe they wanted to give it that shade of meth, that crystal blue shade.
Yeah,
as kind of a, you know, shout out to what it will become.
Right.
But yeah, he inspects a laundry facility, which we understand is the laundry facility he buys in Breaking Bad, and turns into the super lab. He goes out to the car and tells a woman that this is the place and this will do. Mm-hmm. You know, if you watch Breaking Bad, you understand this is Lydia and all that implies. There are just so many appearances in this episode.
There sure are.
The Super Lab being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. And also the blue shift also is probably, now that I think about it, to further differentiate the cool Gus from the hothead Hector, because Hector's layers all warm colors, and you know, it looks like any standard Tex-Mex place.
Yeah.
Fish taco stand.
Then we go back over to Chuck. He bundles up in his space blanket looking like a Depression era grandma on the breadline, and he walks into the city to call his former
like
doctor.
A futuristic one.
Yeah, oh yeah,
like
for
like,
sure.
Like if a Depression hits a Blade Runner universe. Mm-hmm.
Like
this
if Ed
is
Wood
what...
shot a Depression era film. This is what they'd be wearing. Apparently he's trying to get well, right? And
I
that's
think
the reason
so.
To call his former therapist.
I think so.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm trying to understand the motivation for it. Is the motivation to get well so he can move on from
the
Jimmy thing?
If he wants to be Clarence Darrow, then he has to. But on the other, yeah, you do, because, I mean, his whole performance, McKean's performance there with Howard wasn't a man who's accepting. I mean, he did say two new beginnings, but he wasn't accepting, rejecting any of the truth that he was laying out there. So, I mean, it does seem...
And we've
hard
seen
to believe
him
that a guy
before.
As a bulldog as Chuck is going to let this go.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is he let it, like, what's going to pay off? Is it going to be petty revenge against Kim? Is it going to be petty revenge against his brother? Is it going to be him blowing his head off at the end of the season? Who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, I would be more than happy to retire the fuck Chuck hashtag if he does get himself some help and, like, is slightly less of a mess. Slightly less of an asshole. I mean, they redeemed Howard, like, at, you know, so they can reveal a bit of backstory. And honestly, all they'd have to do is give me a flashback of Jimmy literally robbing his dad blind. Like, if that's actually true. And a
montage of him stealing money from the cash
register
over and over.
Yeah, like, they could win. Like, I just don't believe that's true. I believe Chuck is the bigger villain in the family drama story. But, like, they could prove that wrong, and then, you know, Chuck maybe, like, that would be a real... That would be a real reversal of how I feel about the two brothers.
Yeah. So Nacho tells Hector what happened at the chicken ranch. Hector tells Nacho he wants to use his father's upholstery business. He wants to get him involved in smuggling the drugs as his own front. Then he flips out when he gets word that Tuco stabbed a guy in jail. And
broke a guard's jaw, more to the point.
It's too much for his old man body, and he has to take some pills, one of which he drops on the floor, and Nacho hides it under his boot.
Sleight of foot. You see sleight of hand, but sleight of foot, very rare. Very hard to pull off.
Really dexterous with his toes. You'd be surprised.
He's
one of those guys who can drive with his feet.
He could certainly arm a nuclear submarine one-handed, one-footed.
He was counting money under the table while he was dealing with
so
Crazy
efficient.
Eight.
He's so efficient. That's he rubber bands it with his feet while he's counting with his hands.
So this is too far for Nacho, right? Nacho isn't going to let this happen. He's not going to let his dad's upholstery business be taken over by Hector.
No, nor should he.
Right.
Nor should. Plus, because Hector's an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
Hector is a hot... Even if he wasn't an idiot, he's a hothead, which is just as bad. So, like, oh, take care of Poppy. He'll make so much. Oh, the fuck you will,
old
man.
That's not what it's about, either.
Until there's the slightest bit of heat, and then you liquidate his whole business and himself and all my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Gus says that? Maybe. Hector says that you start, like, checking and into fake passports and shit.
Yeah, I don't like it. Nacho doesn't like it.
I feel so bad for Nacho's dad because he has no idea. He has no idea.
He's on the edge. He's on the brink of disaster. Then we go over to Jimmy, who books another ad client, and he tells Kim about his new business. And then he plays the commercial for her. Saul Goodman Productions. The guy says he's never seen so many star wipes in a row.
Did you find it was like, because I don't know if you got this far in the podcast, but Kelly Dixon revealed that, like, their high-end video editor is incapable of making a star wipe.
Yep.
So they
manually do it or get the low-end one out?
No, what they did is she just did, like, the for a placeholder, they did, like, a diamond wipe, and then they sent it over to the special effects department, and they did, like, as a special effect, the diamond wipes, or the star wipes.
Wow.
But I think it's pretty funny that they're, you know, whatever. I forget what they're using. Not Final Cut Pro, because when Vince found that, he goes, see? So why everybody's switching to Final Cut Pro, and all the editors in the room started screaming. So.
Star wipes.
Star wipes is all you got to do for the star wipes.
So I saw this pointed out on Reddit, and I thought it was pretty cool. The getup that he's wearing is not just totally random.
Yeah, it's assembled from the Geek Squad.
Right, his crew. He's got the glasses of the makeup girl. He's got the vest of the sound guy and the hat of the cameraman.
Yeah,
and then the goatee must have just come from the bag.
Right,
I suppose.
The it's so funny because they were talking about this guy who plays the director, the camera operator, who I think is a dead ringer for J.J. Abrams. Okay. To the extent that, like, I can't believe, like, they don't make – that's not a deliberate inside joke. But they're, like, on – they don't ever – they're talking about how he reminds them of some dude from film school and this and that. They're making all these – I'm like, just say J.J. Abrams. Please, say J.J. Abrams because he looks just like J.J. Abrams. They never do it.
I think it reminds them of every person they've ever known in film school.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's what I think of when I think of film school students.
Yeah. I mean, he is. He's just too cool for school. And, you know, he's if he had the money to do, he could do anything. He's the next Kubrick. Oh, that's what they called him. They called him young Kubrick.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, the one guy he does not look like? Stanley Kubrick.
No, not at all. The other thing that I saw on Reddit that was an interesting proposition is that perhaps Saul Goodman made the Tampico furniture commercial that Walter White talks about.
Yes.
Reminisces about with Crazy Eight in the Basement.
Yeah. We actually, you're drinking a listener's milkshake, but because it's got the cheesy jingle too.
Right.
Don't strain your braino. What was it? It's like, if you want furniture, it's bueno.
Refraino something.
Just remember this refraino.
Right.
Tampico Furniture, that's the name-o. It's terrible.
Yeah, that could be Saul Goodman.
Yeah, totally. Totally. We'll have a segment on that in the feedback about what all Albuquerque businesses might shoot a better Saul Goodman production.
Okay, yeah.
I also thought it was interesting where he's talking to his first clients, like, you know, don't show up and wear stripes or you'll moor.
Yeah.
Or moire. Is that a allusion to Jimmy wearing stripes perhaps in the future in the prison? Because the preseason publicity shots were all of him with these painted stripes on, very reminiscent to like a Monopoly Man jail suit.
Yeah, could be.
And also, isn't I guess not. I thought the moire also had something to do with like the death or black or something like that too.
Hmm.
Anyway, then if you don't know that, especially on old CRT TV screens, if the stripes would sometimes interplay with the refresh rate and make a really weird, like you've probably seen it, like a really weird kind of checkerboard pattern, to appear, and they would even like kind of flicker and animate, and it's very very visually distracting.
Yeah.
So you don't wear stripes on the old school TV screens.
I think that's it for the recap.
Oh, actually, I wanted to talk about Jimmy and Kim's relationship here.
Yeah.
Jimmy's very shy about showing her this commercial. Is it just because it's so much worse than the other commercial? Is it because she's going to... And this is related. What does she think of this?
Mm-hmm. She has like a shocked look on her face.
She's like, Saul Goodman. That guy has a lot of energy. That's her reaction. And I couldn't tell it's because she's amazed at what this guy can do in a single day.
Okay, that's probably part of it.
She's scared that he's already on day one of his probation taking an assumed name, which isn't illegal, and doing, while he is doing some shady workings around the legally binding contract.
Mm-hmm. Certainly he can't have registered the name Saul Goodman Productions as a company yet.
Right.
So who knows how that affects it.
I don't think that's illegal.
Probably not.
I mean, if you don't pay taxes and you don't get a properly filled out DBA and all that stuff. But I don't know. I was really trying to gauge her reaction.
It's tough to know.
Also, romantically, where are they at? We know that I think they're still sleeping together, but he suggested, like, you know, half as a joke about, like, earlier in the episode, spreading all her legal arguments out on the and rolling around naked to see what happens, and she laughed at it. Of course, it is a jokey suggestion, but like, I don't feel like their chemistry is the same. Like, I felt like they had really good chemistry in the first season, then they fucked it up by starting the date. And then it further got fucked up by all Jimmy's weird emotional betrayals and the stuff with Chuck. And I don't know. It feels like they're more roommates than anything at this point.
Yeah, I think it it started to disintegrate back when, you know, Jimmy thought he was helping Kim out and got her sent to the cornfield or whatever.
Yeah.
And she was working all that those hours in the basement, and I feel like they kind of lost some connection there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been maintained as well as it could be throughout this past season or so, but I think the cracks are starting to show a little bit. And Kim worries about him on a daily basis, like what is he going to do? Not in the good way, not in like the, oh, he's got a real hard situation coming up, what's he going to do about it? Like, I don't know that I trust Jimmy to do the right thing here,
right.
The legal, correct thing.
Yeah, right.
Like, to get out of the tough situation he's in.
Like, if this is what he's done day one
of
his probation, what the hell is this going to look like 11 months from now?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of weird characters I'm going to have coming in and out of our law office? And
yep.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. Okay, here's the ad, but you might want to skip it because it's something kind of unique this time. It's going to be around the barn way to introduce the club. So Jim and I, at the start of the year, had an idea that we wanted to do this social experiment / prank. We wanted to cover a television show and do a podcast on it, but we were only going to watch the previously on and next time on segments they show at the beginning and end of every episode.
Mm-hmm.
The experiment was, can we do a good podcast about that? Can we fool people into thinking it's a good podcast? Mm-hmm. What is the cognitive dissonance if you were a genuine fan of the show and you're listening to these two people that kind of, sort of, but not quite are getting what's going on in the show? And the piece de resistance is we picked the new teen drama on CW, Riverdale.
Yep.
The revamped Archie. This was based on the Archie comics. It's revamped. It's sexified. Archie's banging Mrs. Grundy. And we did it. We just did that. And it turns out you can't make a good podcast.
Right.
So then towards the middle of it, we just started simulating the downward spiral of amateur podcasts. We experimented with our sound. We experimented feedback. We
let our emotions really get the best of us. Yeah.
We did ill. We cheated on our predictions segment. There's like a lot of things that went wrong. And we chronicle. And here's the point. Here's the club.baldmove.com tie-in. You'd be completely ignorant of all this happening because where this experiment was conducted was on the VIP section of our forums, because we recruited them to give us an unfair iTunes advantage. We got a lot of extremely positive, glowing even reviews. So if you tuned into this podcast and you're like, these guys are what the hell? Why do they have a perfect 5-star rating? I don't get it.
Right.
It was fun. We had
a ton of fun.
We recorded our research process. We recorded the actual recording of the podcast, which essentially was me and Jim making stuff up about Riverdale, and we were cracking each other up. We've heard a lot of positive comments about it, but again, this is the kind of stuff you miss out on. These are kind of extra features. This is every time I was talking about the club and then be like, oh, one of the features, the VIP forums, there's a lot that goes on in there. That's where we vote on community commission stuff. It's where we get feedback about, you know, how we're doing and new segments and new shows. It's kind of a vital part of the Bald Move community, and it's catered toward the people that care the most, the people that join the club. So
yeah, that podcast, if you want to check it out, is called Rah Rah Riverdale. We masqueraded as Al and Joe, two amateur podcasters, first-time podcasters.
Yep.
And we also recorded, just for our club members, a companion podcast called Har Har Riverdale, which was essentially explaining the jokes and talking about the process. And I think it's a really interesting insight into where we, like, how we got to the end of that podcast.
Yeah.
But that's only for our club members. You can find that in the VIP forums.
Yeah. But if you want to listen to Raw, and we get everything seated properly, we actually watched the first episode.
Right.
So if you want to hear, like, what a Bald Move podcast coverage of of Riverdale would sound like, that's how it starts, and then it just starts, it goes descending into madness from there. So if that sounds funny or interesting, and in truth, I think it's both, you can check it out at club.baldmove.com. Don't forget, you get a month free trial. So if this is something you're super interested in, sign up, check out the whole rah-rah Riverdale experiment, and then cancel. See, just take what we give for free. But if you think it's worthy, then maybe stick around. Club.baldmove.com. All right. Are we ready for feedback?
Yeah.
You can send feedback to bettercastsaul@baldmove.com. Joey's up front. Hey, Aaron, just listened to your last podcast. You and Jim noted that you still don't understand the bingo line from Kim at the end of 304. I think I get it. And to be fair, we had a lot of listeners write us in with this very similar suggestion. This is the first one. So Chuck has Jimmy dead to rights on the breaking entry and destruction of property angle, and Jimmy's even officially confessed to it. The hearing could be as simple as reading Jimmy's confession. Kim saying, please be merciful, and the prosecution saying, please punish him, because the facts are established. But Chuck feels that Jimmy's disbarment is not a sure thing if they leave it at that, so he wants to introduce destruction of evidence, which is especially as an officer of the court would be damning and would justify disbarment and not just a suspension. Without the tape in its context, destruction of evidence is not clear. Therefore, Chuck and Hamlin work hard to include mention of the tape in the PPD and go out of their way to make the context of the tape a big part of the hearing. On the other side, Jimmy and Kim have no real way to introduce the tape and the brotherly relationship and Chuck's mental state into their end of the trial. So they allow Chuck to introduce it, all the while pretending they don't want it. This allows them, which the script takes great pains to make clear, to cross-examine Chuck and the tape's wider context, which is only possible because Chuck went there first. Thus, when Kim becomes sure that this is Chuck's strategy at the end of 304, she tells Jimmy, bingo. So to wrap it up in his words, he says, essentially Chuck says, I'll raise you to destruction of evidence. And Jimmy says, I'll see your destruction of evidence and raise you a mentally ill brother. It's not a crafty multi-level caper, but it does make legal sense. And I guess that makes sense because they were – can you imagine if the tape wasn't in evidence, if Chuck's – or if Jimmy's like, you got to understand, my brother's just a real asshole. Like they were writing pretty hard against that particular take. And it was only after that got, you know, essentially what this guy said. I don't know why I'm explaining it again. Sense. That made a lot of sense. And thank you for clearing that up, Joe. Kristen G. Like me, I am somewhat puzzled about Jimmy and Kim's relationship. Up until this episode of season 3, there's nothing to indicate that they were still romantically linked. And that was limited to a tussled bed and them brushing their teeth side by side. For Kim to put her professional relationship and even career on the line for Jimmy, I would think they could spend a little time showing us that they mean more to one another than close friends with benefits. And even that was limited to one kiss, if I'm remembering correctly. Do they live together? That doesn't seem to be the case since they spent the night in jail recently and she didn't think anything was fishy until Ernie showed up at her office to fill her in. I think that's because she's sleeping at the office.
Yeah.
When she comforts Jimmy and offers up her legal help, after she finds out about the PPD, it is limited to holding hands with a distance between them. I would think that even a kiss was not warranted. At least a hug would have been. Kim and Jimmy's relationship seems awkwardly written. Even in Breaking Bad, with its action-packed pacing, you saw a sex scene and some tenderness between Walt and Skyler to show that they were still a loving couple, at least in the beginning. Again, Kim is risking so much for Jimmy, a little nookie or physical affection would seem to be warranted to illustrate that their relationship is deeper than just good friends who share an office space. I mean, since I just said that it's feeling like they're coming off as roommates, I can't help but agree.
Yeah.
Like, instead of popping champagne, like, what if they'd gotten into their office after besting Chuck and just ripped the clothes off each other and fucked?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose so. I don't know. Friends with benefits seems like an apt way to describe it.
Well, and I think to Kristen's point, I guess this is intentional. Like, I don't think that they, like, if they wanted to show this as, like, a steamy, you know, romance.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, because even, like you said, Skyler and Walt, they got together in several different situations, and it seemed like it was always fueled by, like, the danger of the situation, and, like, they showed that kind of, like, weird chemistry.
Yeah, I don't think citing Breaking Bad as an example of healthy lust
but they had chemistry is the thing. They had chemistry, and like, and I did feel like these people had chemistry in spades, and now, like, that's got to be an actor thing, right? Like, I don't think you can fake chemistry, but I guess you can pour cold water over it in your acting job.
Sure. Yeah,
I don't know, maybe two actors sufficiently talented can fake chemistry. I don't know.
Sure.
Let's see. Mike B from Denver. Yes, Jim and Aaron, you are double dumbasses, or maybe you're just too young. Lenny's repair, if you recall, someone put that as a joke in an email, and it just went over our heads. Lenny's repairs are referenced to Michael McKean's character in a 1970 show called Laverne and Shirley. Of course, of course. McKean played a character named Lenny. He had a friend named Squiggy. And I know that because, like, I'm not old enough to be a contemporary of that, but I do remember being on when I was, like, sick, like, kind of like that and the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres and the Brady Bunch would show, like, in the mornings before the soap operas proper started. But I thought his character was Squiggy for some reason, so I didn't get the Lenny reference.
Yeah.
So I'm too young or too stupid.
I've never seen that show.
Whichever.
Just heard about it on Reddit somewhere.
Alex C. from New York City. Which Breaking Bad universe do you think we're most likely to see a Saul Goodman production commercial from? I put my money on Tampico Furniture, or Tampico Furniture, and I sure hope there's discussion about the jingle. Runners-up, Ignacio's dad's upholstery business, A1A Car Wash, complete with an eyebrows cameo.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Laser tag, presumably with a Danny appearance, the nail salon, veterinarian business, vacuum repair, the doghouse drive-in, Los Pollos Hermanos. No way. They're way too.
Yeah, they're upscale.
They got official. I've seen the Los Pollos Hermanos commercial, and it's better.
Yeah.
Dark Horse candidate, Davis in Maine, because we sure did see a lot of that mug this episode. What do you think? I could get down at the doghouse drive-in. That would be pretty sweet.
The hot dog, the chili dog place?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
The car wash would be pretty, especially if you can get Bogdanovan. That would be awesome. The nail salon, like, you know, that would be pretty funny. I'm trying to think if there's anything, like, outside the box. How about Vamos Pets?
I think some of these would be just too much like a Tuco knocking on Tuco's door, right? Like the A1A car wash shouldn't be on the radar of being used, because it's not until Breaking Bad that becomes a thing.
Well, okay. Right? So would you allow then the laser tag and nail salon, because those are part of Jimmy's world, and he that would be things that he would probably try. Those would be connections he'd try to push.
For sure. And I can't even... The commercial that Jimmy would come up with for a laser tag arena would be fucking amazing.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about it.
So him in some floppy headgear with a gun. And
He's got like I see
rolling around. Oh,
he's got like
amazing.
A colander strapped to his head, so it looks high tech. And him and Danny there.
It'd be incredible. Just fog and lasers everywhere.
Sure. So you don't like the. By that logic, you wouldn't like the vet business, since
that's
more of Mike's deal, I guess.
Yeah.
The vacuum repair would be right out, because why would in the hell would you shine a spotlight on that?
Right.
Ignacio's dad's upholstery,
maybe.
Why, but why?
I don't know. Like, I mean, Nacho's trying to get why? That's a good question.
Nacho's trying to keep his dad out of the public eye and trying to keep it, like, well, how would a commercial I can see why it helped Jimmy, because it sells a slop, but how would that help his dad?
Right,
and if it's just I'm with you here, that if it's just to be like huh, we know this, huh?
Yeah,
Tampico Furniture. That Tampico,
lines,
I could
yeah.
also see that.
You think
because,
so?
Because the jingle they've established the fact that he's got one of those
cheesy.
Terrible local cheesy jingles.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's further, like, this is another strip mining the past to make the future bright. They did the whole gag where the season episode titles ended with the O, and you've got the "Don't strain your brain-o for furniture is bueno,"
right?
You know, just remember this refrain-o, like that. That's kind of would also be thematic. So I would accept the Tampico furniture commercial as well.
That sounds like a jingle that's written in 15 minutes,
right? Plus, they've already got Max Osiniega on, so like he could. Yeah. It'd be hilarious if he's doing it and he's got, like, the remnants of a black eye. Like, you can tell that the makeup girls made him up, but he's still got, like, the remnants of a black eye. And...
Wait, but weren't those commercials, like, super old? Wasn't he, like, a kid when those commercials were airing?
Were they?
I don't remember, I'd have to go back and watch that scene.
I watched the scene, but it was just, like, the 30 seconds of Walt and him singing the thing.
Right.
Because I'm like, I bet I can search for Tampico jingle, and sure enough, first result on YouTube. I didn't get the context of it.
As I recall, he was, like, super young when that was happening, so I don't think Max today could play Max that age.
But he also, well, wait, Max is already that age. If he shoots a commercial today, Max is, like, Crazy 8, for better or worse, is the age he is
right, but
now.
What I mean is, I don't think they could shoot Max as like a 13-year-old.
No, I don't think they would. I'm saying like Max would just be the contemporary Max working at Topeka Furniture would be in the commercial.
But I think the commercial is older than that.
Oh, well, if you're...
As I recall, but I couldn't be
sure. But the other thing is, I think it didn't Crazy 8 also say that his dad was like a terrible businessman?
Yeah.
So like him jumping on a Saul Goodman production kind of... like I just feel like that fits pretty well.
Yeah, it's possible.
And, you know, I'm not quite sure about your 13-year-old. That's just based on a memory.
Faulty. So, faulty to be sure.
Yeah. Plus, like, or maybe it's... maybe it's going to be one of those things where his dad's like, hey, remember those old commercials? Let's do another one. Or I don't know. I want to see it to people.
Bring back the jingle.
I want to see him bring back the jingle for sure. I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often.
What's that?
Like, why doesn't Burger King bring back the Where's the Beef or Taco Bell get run back? It's been like 20 years. I'm ready for Yokiero Taco Bell Dog to come back. I'm ready for Spuds McKenzie to come back.
Right. Yeah.
I'm ready for the Blood Noid. Bowl to come back. The Noid can go fuck him. I think the Noid's screwed because, like, did you hear that, like, some crazy guy took over, like, a pizza or a Domino's? Like, there was, like a murder-suicide involved in that ad campaign.
Involved with the Noid?
Yeah.
Was it the Noid?
I don't. It's something that drove a guy crazy and he committed suicide or something. Or maybe shot up a...
Wow.
What is that? Is that Domino's deal?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think he's coming back.
All right.
But yeah, like run some of the classics back, man. You don't have to pay Don Draper for new ideas all the time. Just run them back. All right, Barry C. from the UK. This episode felt like a season opener. What with the course case out of the way, Jimmy sidelined from the law for a year, no immediate plot for Mike, Gus starting in the inevitable war with Hector, and the start of a betrayal by Nacho and Chuck taking his first steps to make himself better. These all felt like the start of new stories. Which, that might be another reason why I liked it so much, as it did feel like, you know, like that's part of the breath of fresh air. It's like, ooh, all these two new beginnings, as Chuck said.
Yep.
With the introduction of Saul Goodman, the inevitable injuring of Hector, and no doubt Jimmy having to dip his toes in a criminal underworld to make ends meet for a year, I have a gut feeling the final four episodes might see the plot advance quickly with a possible time jump to bring us closer to the Breaking Bad timeline.
Yeah, there's also one of the things my girlfriend mentioned while watching this is there's the inevitable September 11th thing that happens the year this is taking place.
You're right.
So to ignore that seems a little bit unrealistic. To go too deep into it seems a little, I don't know, pointless. But like, if they time jump past it, I would be okay with it.
But here's the thing. I think they have to dispose of Kim and Chuck. Mm-hmm. And by dispose, I mean those Barrels. Lines have to be dead and buried and... or at least put on where, like, you could conceivably Jimmy has no contact with them for years if you're going to flash it forward.
Yeah.
Because, like, if they're – if like, Kim and Jimmy are in the middle of, like, a relationship or, you know, the him and Chuck haven't made amends or just, you know, confirmed this, like, we're just never going to speak to each other, it would feel weird to come back 3 years later and either they're just gone or they're still – like let's just put on pause.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, that's the reason George Martin got in so much trouble with Feast of Crows and Dance with Dragons, because he originally intended to go right from the third book, 5 year jump forward in time and get on with the story. But then he started, when he's writing it, it's like, well, shit, it doesn't make sense that this person's been cooling their heels for 5 years and this person hasn't, and this person's not stable enough. And there's no way anyone would believe that Cersei could do that. And then he's got trapped into making all that stuff work. And that's why we haven't gotten novels for forever. I could see Vince Gilligan getting into a lot of same trouble if they don't park these plot lines properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of alliteration.
It's a tough thing to do as well.
Alliteration. I'm all for it because I do think if you jump forward, there's three timelines that are interesting that I can see. This timeline where you actually see Jimmy becoming Saul, the Breaking Bad timeline because. By all accounts, Saul was kind of just like a two-bit huckster lawyer, nothing really interesting beyond accident claims and DUIs until Walter White showed up in his office. And then the Gene timeline.
Yeah.
Then there's nothing to say they can't like jump to some intermediate point in between those first two and like play around with entirely new stuff, but like you know, you're still going to have Gus lurking in the background and Tuco and the cousins. And is that going to be interesting to see Jimmy, you know, Jimmy just haplessly ease into the life of Saul Goodman?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And as much as I think this series is about the struggle of Jimmy, I don't think you can jump too far forward because you miss out on the journey. And I think the journey is the story here. You know, the end goal, I guess, is Saul Goodman, as we know him in Breaking Bad. And if you skip too much of that, I feel like you lose the essence of the transformation, right? Like, where are the boring parts that you can skip? And if you're
right.
making this story up kind of as they go, which is, you know, what they tend to do, I suppose they could build in gaps that just make sense, that Jimmy for a year would have no activities, really.
Right.
I thought that they might try and go that direction with this whole PPD thing.
Yeah, just like, hey, time to flash forward.
But then there's the nagging question of, like, how did Jimmy survive a year without conning and getting arrested for misdeeds? Because that's what he does. So
I mean, they could have they talked about this in the Insider podcast. They could have they talked about, like, things that they could do with him. Like, he could be a used car salesman. He could be the funniest one they did is he was selling double wide mobile homes.
Oh, boy.
Buy half, get the second half free. Like, you know. And you could conceivably, like, you could show him selling, like, his first used car sales, and then, like, 12 months later, hot damn, I got my legal license back. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, it's, but it's so weird they chose this commercial thing where now it's like people, like, I don't want you to park it here. I want to see some of this. I want to see Saul Goodman Productions at, whereas, you know, you see Jimmy sell one shitty car, you've seen him sell them all, essentially. Just like... You see him close the deal with one old person. You know, it would be tedious to watch 20 different contract, you know, or will signings, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I wonder where the drama is going to come from in this. I mean, it could potentially come from just the way that he makes these shady commercials. But they set it up so perfectly because he just naturally leans into the thing he's been doing all along, which is, you know, being a little sleazy and making commercials. It just it's so much better than a used car salesman, right?
Oh,
just
yeah.
like something out of the blue.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense for that character.
And it allows Peter Gould and Vince Gilligan to have a lot of fun, you know, playing with the conventions of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
just
it does.
just like, hey, just, you know, cuz like we recently did a project where we made a podcast, like It's too hard to explain. We essentially made a podcast pretending we're first-time podcasters, making all the mistakes a first-time podcaster making. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's super fun to be somewhat proficient at something and then go back and like poke fun at your beginning mistakes. And I'm sure Vince and Peter have their share of film school disasters and like personal experiences that they could throw in there and have Jimmy relive. And it would be, you know, you just essentially take their lives and you put Bob Odenkirk in it and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I've heard, I wasn't a big Mr. Show fan, but I hear that was one of the highlights, like their fake commercials. Huh. People on Reddit were really going crazy about, like, oh man, is this like Mr. Show? And I didn't get any of that stuff.
But. I haven't seen it, yeah.
All right, let's move on. John Kay, the next few episodes will introduce more friction between, he's making some predictions here.
Okay.
The next few episodes will start to introduce more friction between Jimmy and Saul and Kim. It seems that Kim enjoys Saul's antics in small doses as almost stress relief. But if all she sees is Saul, she may grow tired of the irresponsible and borderline immoral behavior, and more cracks will form. He presumes that Chuck will die, and the death of that will be a burden that will be put on Jimmy and will make things even worse, and it may be enough to drive Kim away for good. I think that's a pretty broad prediction, an easy one, that there'll be friction in Kim and Jimmy's
relationship. Yeah, I think that first one is basically a lock. The second one... is just a shot in the dark, essentially.
I mean, I do think that I find it hard to believe that Chuck will end this a healthy, whole individual.
Yeah.
I could see him in a mental institution. I could see him hospitalized. I could see him dead. And maybe not in like a classic suicide. Like maybe like he's pushing himself too hard and he's on the sidewalk and he has an attack and he stumbles out in the street, gets hit by a bus. Like, it doesn't have to be as dark as him putting the gun to his head, blowing his brains out.
Maybe he's on an airplane that Q crashes into another plane.
Oh,
he
man.
Died in that crash.
Yeah, that would be worth the flash forward if he's on the 737.
Yep.
All right. Let's make that happen. He also opines that we will not get a Hector in a wheelchair reveal until late in season 4 or 5. I feel like they keep dropping breadcrumbs, or pills in this case, mm-hmm. to this eventual outcome, but they can literally drag this out until the final moments of the entire series. That is, until they jump to either current day Breaking Bad or the Cinnabon Days of Gene. What do you think about that one?
I feel like it's a pretty broad window you're giving yourself. Seasons 4 or 5, it's essentially the rest of the show.
Right.
Well, there's true. Like 6 episodes but before
I,
that,
I think
man.
I think his broader point is, and here's where I disagree with him, because the way Hank and Gomi talk about Hector is he's a washed up has-been.
Yeah, yeah.
If he was involved in a drug running game as recently as like a year ago, they wouldn't talk about him that way. They'd be like, oh, this guy was like fucking the boss until he had a stroke and now he can't keep shitting himself. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I just feel like the way they talked about him, that he was like out of the game for a long time. And long time, like 5 years is even kind of pushing it. So yeah. I feel like sooner rather than later. Because the other thing is, this is just not tenable. The situation with Nacho is not good. They've taken care of Tuco for a nice long time.
Yeah.
But this Hector situation has to be dealt with, or Nacho's not going to survive, and his dad's business isn't going to survive. Which I guess there's nothing to say that they can't just destroy all that.
Is it possible that Gus would kill Nacho to keep him from killing Hector?
Kill Nacho to keep him from kill. Of course. I mean, are you asking me if Gus is that ruthless? Yes. Yes, he is.
I guess I'm asking, do you think the show would go that direction in the future? Because I could see, you know, much like they were watching Mike and stopped him, Nacho now has an opportunity with this pill to ricin him, to poison him somehow, whatever. Gus might be watching that as well.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, if his head explodes like a tomato can in Mexico, the cartel's going to be all over that. If a man with obvious health problems is taking pills like candy, if he keels over dead or have a massive stroke, I don't even know what the cartel thinks. Like
I think
why
Gus
would
might
you
see that as an opportunity rather than a bad
thing? Yeah, I feel like he'd be, fuck yeah, do that. Because, like, how in the world can that – just like the Mike thing, that's, like, plausible deniability.
Yeah.
I don't have this capability. How could you accuse me of doing this? This is the you just got unlucky at the border stop. Like, the U.S. government was the instrument of your downfall here. If your biology is so, I think that's and that's going to be a sooner rather than later. I don't think, of course, you know, this show is famous for having ricin hanging around forever,
right?
Or not this show. That's it's a predecessor, successor.
Yeah, whatever.
Sequel, prequel. The original, the OG. So, like, you know, I would have never thought that would have been a plot line for as long as it freaking was.
Yeah.
But there, you know, it was a long, long time. Kevin H. I don't think Nacho makes it to the end of the series, but I also don't think that he's killed. Since Nacho is plainly conflicted by what Hector is pressuring him into, he's going to start making moves against the cartel. Sooner or later, Nacho will become a marked man by the cartel, if not by Hector at least. And to avoid being killed, he will, through machinations yet to be revealed, enlist the services of the Disappearer. Clearly, the vacuum cleaner shop guy isn't on Jimmy's radar yet, so there has to come a time when Jimmy learns about him in some way, even though in Breaking Bad it's established that Saul never personally met him when arranging with a client. This also gives reason for Saul to sell out Nacho in the desert with Walt and Jesse in Breaking Bad, because Jimmy Saul would know at that point in time that Nacho was gone and smart enough to stay gone, so there's no harm in selling a dude down the river when that dude will never be found. That's an interesting theory, because they're right. Part of this, what's been fun about the show, is seeing Jimmy make all these connections that he'll later use. So it stands to reason Vince will show him becoming acquainted with the vacuum repair guy. And Nacho's the clearest and present threat. You know, we know he's not an active part of Breaking Bad universe. I mean, he's mentioned, but he's not an active part. It tracks clean for me.
Yeah, it doesn't have much support. Like, what? The only thing supporting it is we know that somehow, some way, Saul has to get connected with this vacuum cleaner guy.
Well, and also,
though, in a very impersonal way.
And the way Saul talks about Nacho in that very brief scene is, it, like I said in the beginning, it doesn't seem like he's dead.
Right.
So if he's gone, you know, but he might be back at some point for vengeance, or like Jimmy fucked him over somehow and before he got disappeared. Like, you're right. It doesn't have a lot on it.
It's like us guessing how Jimmy becomes Saul. You know, right. We never would have guessed this.
No one had him just pulling this out of his ass on a last minute commercial shoot.
Right. So
if you had that, turn it in for all the internet points, but I don't think anyone did. All right, well, that's it. That's all. We're done with the prediction. The legal department took the week off since there was essentially no legal. And I wonder if there will be going forward. How much legal machinations? I mean, Kim's still got a lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah.
And there, I believe, is going to be some fallout from that.
Probably, yeah.
So maybe maybe they'll have to come back next week off vacation. But yeah. If you'd like to send feedback, as always, bettercastsaul@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week to discuss what I'm sure is going to be another awesome episode.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, Fridays and sometimes Mondays, we do the Who Won the Week. If you watch all the shows, Fargo and Leftovers and Better Call Saul, and you want to hear who we thought won, check that out, because that's coming. But until then, we will see you later.
Yep, see you.